My name's Randy Youngblood. I'm the lead pastor, and I'm glad to be with you, and I really appreciate Praise Team. Thank you for leading us into the presence of God, and we're going to continue there in this series called Facing the Giants. What we're going to do is for the next, this is week one of a new series, we're going to talk about some giants that live in our homes rent-free, who rob us blind, who clear out our refrigerator, and who make us feel guilty when we think they don't belong there. We feel like we need to tolerate them because they're a part of life, and then we feel guilty because they're there. Well, we pay a high price for these giants, and we're going to face them up and make them stop robbing us of peace, contentment, and joy. This week, we're going to talk about facing anxiety, because Americans don't sleep well. 40 million prescriptions were written in 2011 for sleeping pills, and 50% reported regularly using two or more sleep aids per night. And one in six Americans take some form of psychiatric drugs, usually antidepressant. And I find that there's anxiety, there's almost an epidemic of anxiety among Christ followers, because there's anxiety over feeling anxious and people wondering, when is this going to end? I'm not supposed to feel this way. That as Christ followers, there are certain feelings or emotions or situations we find ourselves in that we think, this is wrong. There's something wrong with me. Do you ever have trouble sleeping at night, or do your thoughts become preoccupied during the day of things that are important to you that you can't control and that you're worried about the outcome of what might happen? What is it that keeps you up at night, or what is it that steals your productive thoughts during the day? Oftentimes, we blame anxiety. Well, the news I've got is that anxiety is not the problem. Anxiety is a symptom of a problem. Oftentimes, our gaze, our attention gets fixated on anxiety as the problem, but when we're feeling anxious, we feel anxious because something is worrying us. It's like looking at a fire and yelling, we've got to do something about that smoke. Well, anxiety is the smoke, and the something is burning. From today's message, I want us to be able to experience the peace from being able to go to bed at night knowing that things are under control and things are going to be taken care of, and get up in the morning confident that it is well with my soul. To be able to say those words, no matter how choppy or tumultuous the surface of the water is, knowing that inside our hearts is that deep place where the Lord dwells, and instead of counting sheep at night to try to get our minds focused on just sleeping, I want us to be confident that our shepherd is counting us. Well, we're going to look at five factors in facing anxiety and sleeping well tonight, at those times when faith is hard to come by. The first factor is to name it. If anxiety isn't the problem, if it's a symptom of the problem, then what is the problem? We need to name it. Jesus identified this with his disciples when he said to them, therefore I tell you, don't be anxious. And then he proceeded to name anxieties. Don't be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on it. What did Jesus say? Jesus said to his disciples, something is worrying you. Something is bothering you. What is it? It's life, it's food, it's clothing. Now, it's very possible that his disciples were anxious about these things, because when Jesus said, come follow me, what did they leave? They left their livelihoods, they left their professions, their careers, and they followed him. And I imagine that there was some anxiety over, where are we going to sleep? Where are we going to live? What's going to happen to us? Where are we going to eat? Where's the food going to come from? What when these clothes wear out? There are a lot of us that would have just gone nuts trying to get all those questions answered when all Jesus said is, come follow me. Well, Jesus' invitation to come follow him is the same today as it was then. And even though we're not sleeping out where the Son of Man doesn't have a pillow, a place to lay his head, life is different. But yet the reality is it's very much the same. So what is it? What is it that preoccupies your mind or keeps you awake at night? Maybe you're trying out for a football team this fall and you want to make the team. You're anxious about that. Or you were a starter last year and someone else moved into town and you're concerned that your position would be taken. Or, and as an adult, it's a job. It's a promotion. you had your eye on a promotion and then you're not so certain that it's going to be yours. It could be unmet expectations. We have ideas about how life should go, and we have those ideas based on different stages of life. And yet when life doesn't go the way we expect, there's something that says, you're not normal. I'm not normal. And there's anxiety over being anxious. I'm not supposed to feel this way. What's wrong with me? Well, maybe there's guilt over something you've done in the past that the evil one keeps bringing up that's going to resurface. Or maybe it's something recently that you don't know what the outcome's going to be. Or you're mourning a loss. And it could even be a loss of something that hasn't been lost yet. You're afraid of losing something that hasn't even happened, but you know could, because you're not in control of it. There's the fear of life, and there's the fear of dying. There's the fear of not being able to provide for your family, because there are so many things that are beyond our control. Something is the cause of that anxiety. What is it? The first step is to name it. Not just name it as anxiety or anxiousness, but there's something causing it, because anxiety is the smoke and there's something else that's burning. You're not just feeling anxious. Say, I'm feeling anxious about. Ask the Lord to help you identify what that is. After we name it, there's another step, because once we name it, we recognize what we're feeling anxious about, but our anxiety doesn't go away because we still can't control it. So we need to surrender it, but how? Anxiety is an admission of fact. It's conscious or subconscious realization that I can't control the outcome. And you're worried about letting go. You're worried about being thrown off or falling off. You're worried about how it's going to hurt, how it's going to feel, how it's going to look. You just know that you're clinging on and you can't hold on to it much longer. Now, in one sense, contrary to what we may think, anxiety is normal and it can be good, because it is an alarm making me aware of my limitations. My response to the anxiety, though, is the key to a healthy life. It's easy to get wrapped up about feeling anxious and feeling guilty about it, and then the condemnation begins to pile on, and just need to step back and say, wait a minute, what is it I'm anxious about? Why am I anxious about it? It's something important to me that I can't control. So if you can't control the outcome, what are your choices? You can continue to worry. What's worry? Worry is where you and I will play out all the things that could go bad, and in the process convince ourselves that one of them will go bad. Because when all we see are the things that could go bad, they become so overwhelming, you think the probability is of a disaster. So you and I will either worry and we'll play through our minds how we know it's going to turn out bad, or we're going to surrender it. I remember as a young teen when I first gave my life to Jesus, I remember being anxious. I remember even being depressed. And what I realized at that time was the things that were bothering me, I can't remember what they were, I just remember this. There were things I realized at that time I was not meant to have control over anyway. And becoming a Christ follower from the earliest days, there became an awareness, and it never becomes easy, just an awareness that there are aspects of life that I not only can't control, but I was never meant to control. So worry or surrender, those are the choices. Peter, of the disciples, the man's man, a fisherman, a man who worked hard with his hands, a man who knew what it was like to sweat and get smelly, had a good word about anxiety. You know, oftentimes as men, we think we can't. Remember, there was an old commercial that said, never let them see you sweat. What is it that's anxiety is a cause of humility, embarrassment, because it says that we recognize our limitations. But Peter had a word about this. He said, cast your anxiety on him. Who? On God. He said, just throw it away, erase it, delete it, put it in the recycle bin, get rid of it, give it to him. There's a scripture that says if we have the faith of a tiny little mustard seed, you can throw a mountain to the heart of the sea. And we know that's not meant to be literal, because we've never seen anyone ever do it. But the reality is you and I face mountains all the time, insurmountable heights width. We can't go over it. We can't go around it. We can't go under it. There's only one way out, and that's through it. And that's scary, and it's intimidating, and it's hard, and it produces anxiety. Peter said, throw it. Throw that mountain into the heart of the sea. Throw it on God. Why? Because he cares for you. You see, it's humbling to admit that we have limitations. It's humbling to admit that something is beyond our control because we're told to be responsible. We've got to have control over everything. It's humbling when we have to cast our anxieties on anyone else, even God. But when I humble myself and cast my anxieties upon him, I recognize something, that life isn't just about me. It's about me understanding how he cares for me. And when we talk about being Christ followers, we talk about the reality that we follow Jesus in the mountains, over the plains, and through the valleys, not just calling on him when it's hard, but when it's hard, he's near, and we recognize that's when we learn the best, that he cares for us. And learning that he cares is what gives us, drives the confidence that we need the next time that something is overwhelming. So when we name it and we surrender it, there's a recognition that I am giving up control of it because I never had it in the first place. But here's what Peter said just before he said, cast your anxiety upon him because he cares for you. He said, humble yourself, therefore, under God's mighty hand. And he's not saying that God is oppressive and he's mean and he's putting the pressure on. It's the recognition that God has a mighty hand that moves in this direction. It says, humble yourself under God's mighty hand so that in the right time, in his time, he may lift you up. How many of you see God as an oppressive hand that comes down? God has a mighty hand that's beating on your head, who's holding you down, who's making life hard to punish you for the times that you didn't trust him, when the reality is all he wants you to do is understand how much he cares for you and me, and that when life is overwhelming and beyond our control and I need to surrender what's causing the anxiety, I recognize that God's hand moves this way. God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And the scripture says to humble ourselves under God's hand so that in due time he can lift us up. You know, when this scripture most impacted my life, it was in that period of time when I wasn't in the ministry. As many of you have heard, there's a period of time I thought, I got to go find something I'm good at because it certainly isn't this. And so I left, I taught school, and then after about 5 years, God began to show me that he had created me to be a pastor. Just some things he had to change in how I thought and in my heart. He was doing some work inside of me during that time. But there was a trip I took. It wasn't a pilgrimage or anything like that, but it kind of turned out that way. Our youngest daughter played on a softball team that was having a tournament up in Park City, Utah. And so Kim having to work, me being a school teacher, I got to take her. And we went through, and you're going to laugh at me, we went through Las Vegas. Because there was a church I wanted to visit there. Now, something really cool last night, when I told this story, and I hinted at telling this, what happened last night, the last service, but I forgot, so I got to tell it now, otherwise I'll forget here too. There was a woman that came up to me and said, was that church Central Christian? I said, yes, it was. Did Judd Wilhite preach? I said, no, there was a guest speaker. And oftentimes you go wanting to hear somebody and a guest speaker, and at that point you got to decide, okay, am I going to let God speak to me through anyone, or does it have to be through a someone? And by the way, this lady said, you know what, I went to that church for 13 years, and I moved, and I've been looking for the place to come next, and I believe that I found it. Well, for me, it was this verse. There was a guest speaker, and when she came out and taught this, it was, get this, humble yourself under God's mighty hand because in the right time, he will lift you up. And what was I going through at that time? What do I do with the rest of my life? Did I miss my calling? Did he really make me to be a pastor? And if so, what do I do about it since I quit? And I'm now a math teacher. And the word that night for me was, trust God because his hand is mighty and he has the ability to lift you back up in his timing. So when we talk about naming our anxiety so we can surrender it, rather than just this anxiety that's just engulfs me. Then we surrender it. But what do you really, what do we surrender? We surrender timing. And isn't that the essence of the control we seek? We want what we want when we want it. I mean, if you go to Starbucks and the line is too long and you give up on the, you don't have control over the timing and get into work on time, that can be frustrating. But that's so minor when we're talking about the real things of life. But when we surrender, what we're really surrendering is the outcome. We're surrendering control. We're surrendering any control whatsoever over the timing, and we're surrendering it to God. Because isn't that what control is all about? So, you name it when you're feeling anxious. What is the cause of that anxiety? And then you name it and you hand it over, you surrender it to God. But how do you know? I mean, you can say it, talk is cheap. You can say, God, I surrender this. But the reality is our fingers can be white knuckling around this thing. We say we just surrendered. How do we know? Here's one way. Thank God for the outcome. Expressing gratitude is a way of living faith. You may think it's just talk, but the reality is faith is the conviction of things unseen. That's what how Scripture in the book of Hebrews defines faith. Faith is the conviction of things unseen. So what you and I do, once we surrender something to God, we thank Him for what He's going to do because it reinforces our faith. It's an expression of faith. And just like our musical worship, when we're expressing faith, we're speaking truth, and we speak truth, we hear it, and it seems to find its way to seep into our heart that makes some change in the deep place. So when we begin to thank God for what He's going to do, we're recognizing that God has a role in the outcome, and we're expressing gratitude over something that's not even seen yet as confidence that God is in control. What are some opportunities that you have to surrender anxieties? Are there major purchases? I know one family that's starting to look for a house. And there's so many implications over whenever you buy anything big because you just don't get in line at Walmart and return a house. And yet, if you buy something, it's real easy to overspend that causes other problems that you didn't anticipate until they're problems. And you think, oh, what was I thinking? So there's so many implications over any big decision that it's a cause of anxiety that needs to be surrendered. Health issues. We're not in control of health. We think we are. We can take our vitamins. We can follow the doctor's orders and take our antibiotics till the bottle's empty, just like we're told. But we're not really in control, are we? Because bad things can still happen. Money problems have a way of hypnotizing us to really convince us that the problem is not enough money. So when there's a money problem, we start feeling anxious. How do I make more money? And it masks what the real underlying problem is. And so it needs to be surrendered. Relationship messes. What do you do when you've apologized and you've asked for forgiveness and they say no? What do you do? You say it again. Do I say it again? Louder, slower, faster? What do I do? We're not in control, and the relationship ends, and you're at the mercy of the other person, whether the relationship will ever be the same or ever be again. I remember being anxious about which sports teams our daughters played on. When we moved to town, our oldest daughter was 3. We came from a town of 3,000 people, a high school of about 300, and looked at a high school here of almost 3,000, and I thought, oh my goodness. If our kids, when they get to high school, even want the choice to play sports, they're going to need my help. And that put us on a plane of a lot of decisions that we didn't understand the implications of at the time those decisions were being made, but that was the root. But when our oldest started playing softball, I was thinking, okay, I got to make sure she gets on the right team and the right age division. What do I do? I felt like I was responsible. And then when the second one came along, I was a little more relaxed. But then I really didn't get relaxed till I was all done with our kids. And then in 2011, I started my third group of coach pitch girls in softball I wanted to take through Buena. And my message to the parents was completely different, but it was a voice of experience when I said, you can't make your kids good. You can make it fun And if it's fun, they'll keep playing. And if they keep playing, they'll probably become good. But you can't make them good. You can make it fun. So let's have fun. I'll coach them up. You encourage them, make it fun so they want to keep playing. And you'll be amazed at the results. So oftentimes, we're anxious over things that we were never meant to control in the first place. Paul has the answer, but it's a surprising one. He says, rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord when? How often? What's it say? Use your observation skills. Rejoice in the Lord always. Now, does that include everything? So immediately your mind goes, that includes the things I'm not too happy about. Isn't that what we're talking about? Name it, surrender it, thank God for it. And Paul says, you know what? I don't think you heard me the first time. Rejoice. I'll say it again. Rejoice. Let your gentleness, your peace be evident to all. You don't need to be anxious. Do you know how crazy it looks when you rejoice when something bad happens? It looks crazy, doesn't it? Not to everyone. Do you think when you thank God for a good outcome in a bad situation, do you think that looks crazy to those in heaven? What do you think? How do you think the angels see you're rejoicing? Praise God, God's going to do something good in this awful situation. The angels in heaven, what do? If they can see you and hear you, they look at the throne and think, you're right, he's got it. God's big. People on earth, they can't see God. They're the only ones that think you're crazy. But those who see God as he is think, you've got it. You've nailed this one. So Paul says, rejoice. I'll say it again. Rejoice. I assure you, it doesn't look crazy to everyone when you rejoice in bad things, because you are expressing faith in the God who is and who is to come. It doesn't look crazy to those in heaven, and it doesn't look crazy to anyone who knows the glory of God. And so let our gentleness be evident. Paul goes on to say, because the Lord is at hand. He's near. He's close by. Because the Lord is at hand, he says, don't be anxious about anything. Rejoice about everything. Don't be anxious about anything. Those are two absolutes that we can't argue with. He says, but instead of being anxious about anything, in everything, he says, by prayer and supplication, present your requests to God. What did I leave out? Present your requests. How? What rider do you put with that? With thanksgiving. What difference does that make? That's what opens up the eyes to see God in the situation. Without thanksgiving, all you've got is our anxiety. Without God, all we've got is what we can control. But once we start thanking God for what he's going to do, not specifically telling him how he has to handle it, this is where our thinking comes, where we trust God, period. We don't trust God for. God, I trust you for this thing that I really want. We don't tell him what the outcome has to be. We surrender it. We surrender the outcome. We surrender the timing. Because our God has a mighty hand, and at the right time, he will lift you up. It's just too often, and this is the essence between the generational gap. When we grow up as young men and young women, we're convinced we can do more than our parents are convinced we can do. We look at all the things that we can do, and they look at all the trouble that we could get in. And so we look in crossways. Man, if we could put those two pictures together, we'd have it. But instead, all we look is at ourselves from our own perspective, and we have a conflict. But instead of being anxious, just surrender it to God and let him have control over the outcome and the timing, the whole shebang, and leave them there. And what's going to happen? Look at verse 7. And what? And what? The peace of God. Do you know what those 40 million prescriptions are trying to buy? This. 40 million prescriptions are trying to find the peace that's beyond understanding. And God gives it free for a prayer. And when we do that, the peace of God that we just can't even wrap our brains around, you know what happens? That which I can't wrap my brain around, I give it to God, and then the peace that I can't wrap my brain around. So which you want to worry about figuring out? Don't even worry about figuring out the peace. Just accept it. Have you experienced that? It says it'll guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. What a promise. You know, I don't know how many times I've gotten up and gone on a prayer walk and something just tied in knots, and I don't talk to anybody, read anything, just pray. And by the time it's over, there's a peace that I can't describe, nor understand, or deserve, or make any sense, or have any control over holding on to, other than being in that place of surrendering the outcome. It's the only way to get it. So you and I name it, we surrender it, and we begin to thank God for it. Then what? Well, here's the fourth factor. We've got to trust our shepherd to handle it. Trust our shepherd. Trust your shepherd to handle it. David, King David in the Old Testament, was quite a poet and a shepherd. He knew what a shepherd was. And this shepherd said, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." Now, David was a shepherd. He was a good shepherd. And we know this from a discussion he had one time with King Saul. King Saul, David's brothers, older brothers, were fighting in Saul's army, but at this point all they did was hide and cower from this giant of the other side who would come out twice a day taunting the armies of Israel and daring them to go, oh, mano a mano, one-on-one for all the marbles, and no one would take him on. In 40 days he came out and taunted them, and David shows up with a care package for his brothers and says, "What are you guys putting up with that for?" And they looked at him. He was a young boy, probably a teenager. And they said, "Kid, look how big he is." And he said to them, he went up to King Saul, and he says, "I'll fight him." And Saul looked at David, probably sneered, and said, "Don't be ridiculous. You're just a boy. And that giant has been a man of war since his youth. You don't stand a chance. He's bigger. He's stronger, he's more cunning, he's more experienced, and you're nothing. And he would kill you." And David came back with this. Now, his argument starts out kind of weak. He says, he persisted, he said, "I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats." Now, that doesn't win any arguments, does it? "I can take on the giant because I watch sheep and goats." Well, here's what he said. "And when a bear or lion comes and steals one of my lambs, I go after it with the rod, the club, and I go rescue it from its mouth. And if that animal turns on me, I grab it by its jaw and I club it to death." Easy as that. Now, imagine the first time he did that. It probably wasn't spoken with that kind of confidence, you think? That kind of faith isn't a gift, it's developed. So I imagine David, the first time he saw a lion or a bear take one of his sheep, I imagine he said, "Okay, that's one sheep. How many do I have left?" But he thought, no, a good shepherd is willing to lay down his life for his sheep. And a shepherd has a rod, which is a club, and a staff. A staff is used to guide sheep and direct them and to lead them. A club is used to protect them. And so he went after that first time, and imagine the adrenaline, his heart just pumping, and the adrenaline, not knowing the outcome, but knowing what he had to do. And so, trusting God to do it, he went to rescue the sheep, and the animal turned on him, and he learned that you could take it by the jaw and club it to death. And it worked, and he rescued the sheep. And as he trusted God in those things that weren't so little, they were little when compared to Goliath. There would never have been David and Goliath told if it wasn't David rescuing the sheep from a lion or a bear. And so he said to Saul, "I have done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, because he has defied the armies of the living God, and I won't stand for it. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." David understood the importance of surrendering himself and the outcome to his shepherd. But where does that kind of faith come from? It comes from trusting, learning to trust his shepherd to handle countless other little situations. So when he said, "The Lord is my shepherd," it's a challenge as well as a directive for us. Can you say that? Can you say that? Many would say Jesus is a shepherd. Jesus is a shepherd. He cares for people like sheep. Many would say Jesus is the shepherd. He's the good shepherd. But few people are able to really say Jesus is my shepherd. Jesus is my shepherd. Because the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He will always provide what I need. Saying that Jesus is my shepherd is a way of saying with confidence, he will care for me. David went on to say, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." When have you felt the shadow of death? Maybe it's you or a loved one in health crisis. Maybe it's losing a job. There are all sorts of things. Maybe a relationship. There are many ways that the shadow of death is present, and it's not always reality. Sometimes it's just the threat of what could be real. But we all have that moment where we realize that something is outside of our control. And David knew the dangers of shadows. The places that he led sheep, there were lots of rocks, there were canyons, there were places, lots of places where wild animals could hide and could pounce from. There are lots of places where robbers could lurk and spring from. David knew the dangers of shadows. What are you going to do when you think you see something but don't? Knowing that at any moment, the worst that you think you can imagine could happen. You're either going to go insane or you're going to learn to surrender it. And we walk through the valley every day, not knowing what the day holds. We're not guaranteed of tomorrow. We're not even guaranteed of this afternoon. But we think we are, and so we lure ourselves into this peace thinking that we're in control when we're not. And the things that we're anxious about are such a few of the things that we don't have any control over. If we really knew how little control over, we'd go nuts. And then we'd begin, as we understand our limitations, we'd know where our faith begins, to be able to name it, to surrender it, thank God for it, and then to trust our shepherd with it. You see, when we trust our shepherd, we can walk through the valley of the shadow of death and fear no evil. David says, "I fear no evil because you are with me. My shepherd is with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." David knows that if he can take that rod and he can club a lion to death to rescue a sheep, he knows his shepherd will do the same. And Peter describes Satan as a roaring lion. "Greater is he who is in you, Christ follower, than he who prowls through the world." Do you believe that your shepherd knows how to use these clubs? Do you know? You believe your shepherd knows how to use his rod and his staff? Because they will only bring comfort to you, like they brought to David, if you really believe he possesses them and knows how to use them and is willing to take care of you, to protect you. Have you declared, "Jesus is my shepherd. Jesus is my shepherd. I will trust him to protect me." Name it, surrender it, thank God for it, trust your shepherd with it. But there's still one more. And this is the biggie. It's the hardest one. Because some days your greatest faith move is just to get out of bed, isn't it? And that's why step 5, the fifth factor, is keep moving. Keep moving. When you don't feel like it, you've got to get up. You get up, you get out of bed, you brush your teeth, you do your hair, you shave, put on your makeup, you get dressed, you get ready, because the things that you do to get ready says that your life matters to someone. You may not even know who, but someone, you matter to someone. Because when you and I are still alive, that means God's not done with us. David didn't die, the scripture says, until he had fulfilled God's purpose for his generation. And that is the benchmark for a fulfilling life, accomplishing that for which God put you on earth. Keep moving. David said, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. I trust my shepherd. I will keep moving. When I'm anxious, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He uses his staff to lead me beside still waters when I'm worried. And when I don't feel like getting up, when I don't feel like eating, I will trust my shepherd to provide for me, and I will keep moving. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. He attaches his name to me, and I matter to him. I will trust my shepherd to guide me. I will trust my shepherd when I'm hurting. I will trust my shepherd to care for me. I will keep moving. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, because I can't go around it, I can't avoid it, I can't fly over it, the only way out is through, and because I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me, because I trust my shepherd to use them to protect me and to guide me, and I know he will. I will keep moving. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. I wish you'd get rid of my enemies. I wish you would slay them and defeat them and annihilate them and exterminate them. But there they are. And you prepare a table for me in their presence so they can see me and they know that you care for me. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. I will trust my shepherd and I will keep moving. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. I will keep moving and they will catch up. They're there. They're not far behind. That day is coming and I will be aware of their presence. Goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever in the next life. I will keep moving and I will trust my shepherd to protect me. I will trust my shepherd to care for me and I will trust my shepherd to provide for me. I will keep moving, and the good that my shepherd has planned for me will follow, and it will surface in his time, in his way, and for his glory and my good. I will keep moving. When you are walking through the valley of the shadow of death, keep moving. Why? Because you're not going to die in that valley. You're not going to die in that valley. Your shepherd would never permit it. You're going to walk through that valley of the shadow of death because it is in that valley your shepherd has the opportunity to prove how he cares for you, how he protects you, and how he will provide for you. And this is the moment that he's living for, to show himself to you. But you've got to keep moving. So how do you respond to anxiety? When you're anxious, you name it. This is what worries me. When you're overwhelmed, you surrender it. When you're frustrated, you thank him for it. When you're discouraged, you trust him with it. And when you're afraid, you keep moving. Because you're not going to die in that valley. You're going to stand on the day that evil is defeated. You're going to laugh at the taunts of evil when you recognize that they have no power over you. They have no power over your shepherd. And you're going to dance on evil's grave. So keep moving, because your shepherd has your back. When you lay down at night, the anxiety that you surrendered to him, he's got it. And he has a mighty hand, and he will lift you up in his time, in his way, that is always for your good and his glory. And that's what we live for. We don't live to make God do our bidding, to do our work our way, because we are worried when things exceed our control, but the moment they exceed our control, then we get to experience God. But we'll never experience his power and his deliverance if we're so worried about worry. And the only way out is through, and the only way through is to name it, to surrender it, thank him for what he's going to do good through it, trust him with it, and keep moving. Where do I find help? Well, this week, let's in our time with God, let's read Matthew 6 and ask ourselves, how do I find more peace? It's there. Find it. I'm also told these resources are helpful. My youngest son-in-law gave me permission to tell a little of his story. He's someone who grew up a good Christian boy and found himself surrounded with anxiety and not knowing how to deal with it, and he sought help, and he's conquering it. And he said these were some books that helped him. I'm so proud of him. I love him. Both my sons-in-laws are terrific men. Goliath Must Fall by Louis Giglio, a well-known pastor who suffered debilitating anxiety and depression and found deliverance through it. In his book, Goliath Must Fall, is about winning the battle against your giants. The Worry Trick by Dr. David Carbonell. He said that it's about how our brains trick us into expecting the worst and what we can do about it. And then The Chatterbox by Stephen Furtick, hearing God's voice above all the others. It's amazing how the voice of condemnation often gets our ear at the expense of the voice of hope. And Zach went on to say, he said, for me, the process was understanding what was happening and why, accepting that it was happening and that there was nothing I could do about it, and then learn how to surrender to the Lord all day, every day. Learn how to surrender to the Lord all day, every day. And that's where I see so many Christians lose it, because they think, when is this going to end? I shouldn't have to keep living this way. The expectation is that Jesus will set me free so that I can live free as I want, but the reality is this is a war, and this is spiritual warfare, and this is walking by faith. Being able to acknowledge when anxiety exists, to name it, to surrender it, to thank him for it, trust him with it, and to keep moving, walking by faith, step by step, knowing that my shepherd has my back. There was one time Jesus got in the boat with his disciples, and the disciples followed him, and they pulled off from shore, and it was an exhausting day. Jesus just went to sleep in the bottom of the boat. And as they made their way across the Sea of Galilee, which isn't that big, you can see the other side, but it's far enough, and you get out in the middle, and storms can come so quickly because of the way that the canyons are on one side. The winds can whip through there, and a storm can come up in a hurry, and on this occasion, it did. And the wind was whipping up the water, and the water was lapping into the boat, and the boat was filling up, and they're all getting wet. And they woke up Jesus and said, Lord, save us, we're going to die. This was earlier in the ministry. They didn't know exactly who this man was. They just probably a little galled that he could be sleeping at such a time as this, but he practiced what he preached, what can I say? And he said to them, why are you afraid, you of little faith? And he got up, he may have yawned, he may have stretched, and he said, peace, be still, and poof, it was quiet. And went back to sleep. And the guys looked at him and said, what kind of man is this, that even the wind and the waves obey him? Even the wind and the waves obey him. What kind of man is this? Who is this man? Say, he's my shepherd. He's my shepherd. That man is my shepherd. And you know what? The wind and the waves still know his name. He still commands the wind and the waves. The wind and the waves that make life messy, that make life scary, that move the trees and create those shadows in the valley of the shadow of death and convince us that evil is going to overwhelm us and overtake us and defeat us. But he's a good shepherd, and his rod and his staff will protect and will guide us. So keep moving, because you're not going to die in that desert. Your shepherd will not permit it. And that shepherd is named Jesus. And Jesus said, do this to remember me. He came to earth, and a good shepherd does what? A good shepherd gives his life for his sheep. A shepherd that will give his life for you is a shepherd that can be trusted. And when death took him to the grave, he didn't remain there, did he? He rose and he danced on the grave of sin and death. And it's that shepherd who died to set us free. And one of the things he died to set us free from was the need to worry about anything.